Welcome to this episode of the Long Haul Chronic Fatigue Summit. I'm so happy to have with me my friend and colleague, Dr. Tom Moorcroft. Today, we're going to talk about the intersection of long COVID and chronic Lyme disease. This is a topic that is very dear to my heart and to Dr. Gordon's heart, and it is in fact why Dr. Gordon and I are doing the summit. Myself, Dr. Gordon, and Dr. Moorcroft have been treating patients with complex chronic illness, particularly Lyme disease, autoimmune conditions, infections, and environmental toxins for a long time now. What we've learned over the many years of treating these patients with complex chronic illness absolutely has crossed over with long COVID. So welcome, Dr. Tom. I'm so happy to have you here with me today.
Yeah, thank you so very much. I'm so excited. It's an honor to be here with you guys and looking forward to our conversation.
So am I. So let's start by having you introduce yourself to our audience.
Yeah, sure. I'm Dr. Tom Moorcroft. I'm the co-founder and medical director at Origins of Health. And we started out calling ourselves an osteopathic wellness center. And really the reason my wife and I both got into medicine was we saw that a lot of conventional approaches were necessary in certain situations, but most of the time they were actually sort of even constraining you expressing your full optimal health and living your best life. And so we were really interested in learning how the body works and how we can really ignite self-healing. And so for me, I was an outdoor person my whole life and I loved nature. And this is really what got me into medicine because I just wanted to get paid to play outside, right? And so I was at the University of Vermont and I'm learning all about ecology and wildlife management and the landscape, but all the adults I was talking to just wanted to talk and look at data and then do nothing. So I tried to figure out who I could talk to that would really be pumped and make a difference. And I was like, the kids love this. Uh-huh. So I took this AmeriCorps internship at the Institute of Ecosystem Studies in Millbrook, New York. And I started to learn how to better teach children and make sure that my message was getting across through a proper assessment, but also just giving them, sharing my passion with them. So I was stoked. I was playing outside, I was mountain biking all the time, I was getting paid to do it. Uh-huh. And then like one day my boss found me and she kind of had to shake me and ask me what was going on. And she actually found me staring at a computer, blank computer screen, drooling all over myself. And then she goes, "What's up?" I'm like, "I don't know. I thought I felt fine." But the more we kind of sat down and talked about it, like my brain wasn't really working and I kind of had that joint pain and muscle aches and I was so tired and it was interesting. She's like, "Go to the doctor." So I make an appointment a couple of days out to go see the doctor. And the day before I see him, I have this rash that came out that covered a fifth of my body. And the long and the short of it was, he's like, "Hey, you've got classic Lyme disease. Here's doxycycline, this antibiotic for 10 days, you'll be fine." So for the first 4 days, I laid on the floor shaking and sweating and like couldn't go to I was 23 and my parents had to carry me to the bathroom. I was in so much pain, but 10 days later, I felt kind of good. But over the next sort of 4 or 5 years, joint pain, fatigue, and brain fog kind of crept back into my life. And then I went to all these doctors and they're like, "Oh, you've got depression, you're bipolar, but it's the good kind. It's the type two that all the doctors and lawyers have." and then in the end, it was like 6 years into this. And I go to my primary and I'm like, "Look, I've got this crushing brain fog, horrible fatigue. The joints are killing me. And I'm newly married. And like, if my wife touches my arm with her elbow, I fear searing pain goes shoot out of my finger. And then it ricochets back up like Darth Vader shoved a lightsaber up my arm into my head." And I'm like, "This is not a great way to start a marriage."
Right.
You know? And so anyway, like I just said, "What do I have?" And he goes, "Oh, I know, I've got you covered. You've got chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia."
Wastebasket terms.
Yeah. And then he goes, so he gave me a diagnosis of my symptoms, which gave me no understanding of what was the cause of my symptoms and no hope to get better.
Right.
And I remember a couple of days later, I'm staring at a wall for the second time now, instead of the computer screen, it's a wall. And I go, I saw my entire life in front of me. Uh-huh. And I was like, there's this path over here, which is dark and going down the same path that I'm currently on. Or I can look over here and I see I'm young, I'm deeply in love, and I want to have a family. I love my dogs and playing outside. I want to play ultimate frisbee. I want to play more, you know, mountain biking, more skiing and hiking, the whole nine yards. And I was like, this is happening right now, but there is no way in my mid-20s I'm giving up on that. And so I just kind of in that moment said, hey, that's what my future must be like. That is the only future. And within a couple of days, somebody handed me a yoga DVD and I started and I could barely touch my shin, my kneecaps. Within mm-hmm. 6 months, I felt of just doing as whatever I could that day, because some days I could barely even put the DVD in the thing. I slowly but surely got, you know, my fascia started to open up, the energy started to move. I started to detoxify. Then lo and behold, my body taught me that Coca-Cola is not a food group, because uh-huh. I didn't know back then. Uh-huh. And over the next 2 years, I just did whatever felt natural inside of my body. I put that objective mindset on, not the fear mindset. And I listened to my heart, and I was 75% better by the time another coincidence like the yoga DVD came into my life. Cause as I'm sure you know, for me, and maybe the people listening don't know, I don't believe in coincidences. There's all these things we set up for our own benefit and the benefit of others. Somebody said, hey, you're scheduled to do your medical school rotation 3 hours from home. So you'd have to stay up there. We just had an opening right down the road, 20 minutes. Would you like to go meet with these people? And I walk in. Every single person, brain fog, fatigue, anxiety, horrible, just, you know, joint pain and muscle pain. She's an osteopath teaching me hands-on stuff, treating all these people with this weird mystery illness. And this guy's a naturopath, kind of sounds like, you know, some other people I know who might be doing this summit. And uh-huh. and he's doing all these herbs and medicines. And I was like, at the end of the first day, I'm like, whatever these people have, it's exactly what I have. Please help me. Mm-hmm. And that last 25%, these two amazing physicians helped me get my life back. And that was over 12 years ago that I last did treatment, and I've been symptom free ever since. So you can have Lyme. Oh, and they also found out I had undiagnosed babesiosis, which I could have died from because they didn't test. Uh-huh. Thankfully I didn't, but 8 years of untreated babesia and 8 years of chronic Lyme disease, followed by about 4.5, 5 years of treatment, totally symptom free now. So you can have really long standing infections, you can get better and stay better. And the reason I like to share the whole thing is I know the pain, mental anguish, because they were like, you're depressed. I'm like, no, I'm pissed off at you because you can't tell me what's wrong with me. And you're the one with the degree. But there are people out there, like all of us on talking on the summit, who can help you, and you can get better. And then lo and behold, the lessons we all learn, we can apply to new things that come up that might have a different name than Lyme and babesia.
Right, right. Thank you so much for sharing your story with the audience. It's so touching, and it's such an example of really how to channel your inner warrior for your joy, not to fight something else, but for your own life, for your own inner strength. And you give hope to all these people who are suffering. I know there are many people watching today who suffer from chronic Lyme and also long COVID.
So, oh my gosh, right?
Yeah, so thank you for sharing that. So both of them are multi-layered and complex, as you well know, right? And it's a mystery to solve that's unique for each person, but then the symptoms of long COVID and Lyme share some similarities. Let's dive into that.
I mean, I think the thing is, like, I always remember I trained with a couple of really amazing people. And certainly Dr. Gordon was one of the people who actually influenced me early in my career. So it's always like whenever I can, you know, be a part of something that you two are doing and he's doing, it just blows my mind. So it's just like,
we're so happy to have you here.
Thank you. And so I studied also with Charles Ray Jones, who recently passed, but he's, for anyone who doesn't know, he's really one of these avant-garde sort of talk about warriors. He was one of the original people who stood up for patients who were misunderstood, and we didn't know what was going on with them. And he started treating them even before we had a name for Lyme disease back in the early 70s. I mean, this guy has been doing this forever, and he knew. So he was like the premier pediatric Lyme practitioner, who I really believe that if he was, when I met him, he was in his mid 80s. So if he had been in his 60s, then we'd probably have solved this chronic infection issue by now, because he would have been able to incorporate all the tools that you and I have the benefit of. But the reason I bring him up is he talks about it when we talk about infection triggered autoimmune encephalitis, and we see kids with behavioral issues. Right. We have this thing we call PANS and PANDAS. And, you know, PANS is this pediatric acute onset neuropsychiatric syndrome. But when you break, he broke it down in a way that made it actionable. And that's really where I think is important. He called it an infection induced or infection triggered mm-hmm. autoimmune encephalitis mm-hmm. or encephalopathy. So brain inflammation. Now I go one step further and I would call it a toxin induced autoimmune encephalitis because uh-huh. it doesn't always have to be in your brain and your central nervous system. It could be in your joints. It could be in your gut. But if we look at it in that way, we have a framework of, we have a toxin from outside of our body that's been introduced, whether it's Lyme disease, COVID, or even a food substance, you know, or maybe EMF toxicity or whatever it is for your particular body. And then we know it doesn't always have to, but it may trigger autoimmunity. And that hyperreactive immune system is the thing I see that's really common, leading to some kind of inflammation between COVID and COVID long haul, Lyme long haul, Babesia and Bartonella long haul, and if you want to call it that for a moment. And that's what I think that what I was empowered by him learning is that when we break it down to its key constituents, then we can come up with an empowering treatment approach. And that's really, I think, an important place to start.
Right. I completely agree with you about that immune dysregulation, right? And the hyperactive immune system that we see. So we see autoimmune conditions. We see these hypersensitivities in patients, mast cell activation syndrome on one hand, and then on the other hand, we see this dampened immune system. They can't mount an appropriate immune response to kill an infection. And so other infections that have been able to lie dormant because the immune system could keep it in check, now suddenly they become active again.
Yeah, right? And I think this is a really key point you're bringing up is it's not, it's really immune dysfunction.
Yeah.
And so I was gifted by my parents, in addition to, I didn't know this during the Lyme journey. I found this out afterwards when I was helping my dad with health issues, but I found that he had low immunoglobulins. Uh-huh. And then I was like, well, I know that can be congenital. And lo and behold, found out I had them, and then found out my mom also helped me have that. But what's really interesting when we have low immunoglobulins, a lot of IgG in particular, a lot of people with low IgG fall into a kind of, it's a little bit of a grab bag, but it's a thing called common variable immunodeficiency. And so what I find is a lot of people think that that immunodeficiency is just low immune function, but it's really dysregulation. And my experience with different infectious exposures, previous vaccine exposures, kind of before I sort of learned more about what my body really needed and was medically educated. I was just kind of a person on the planet. Some things I would respond very well to and normally and appropriately. Other things I would have I would not have any response to at all. Right. And other category of things is I would have a ridiculously over the top response.
Right.
So that's the dysregulated immune system. It's not always low or high. It's not one or the other. It can be one thing makes you go through the stratosphere and something else puts you in the ground.
Right. And then that's unexplainable in a way because it seems to be so random, but I think it's really about where the toxins, as you spoke about, meet the genes. So mm-hmm. toxins can be from the outside, and environmental toxins, could be heavy metals, pesticides, could be biotoxins from tick-borne diseases or from other bugs. Right. So that causes immune dysregulation. And then there's the genes they express. And this is where it becomes so personal, so individual.
It's interesting too, because, you know, when you look at the sort of that phenotype that we see, you know, like we see the external expression, it's like you've got this external environment acting on you, which then changes your internal environment.
Right.
And then you have your genes. But in that whole picture, there's one thing that you have a clear control over, which is your internal environment. You can control some of what's put into you. I understand you can't, if you happen to have a mold exposure or whatever in your environment, or like, you know, when there's fires, you're breathing in toxins or whatever. But the thing is, you can choose the food you put in your mouth. You can choose your hydration. You can choose your movement, which allows you to modify the internal environment and help your toxins move around and hopefully get out. But you can also choose that energetic state and that emotional state that you live in. Now, all of this is very complex and it intertwines and interrelated to your genes and the environment that you grew up in, because I certainly have a little bit of a hot spot that I easy irritability anger streak that I learned very clearly from my dad. And I'm very clear that he and his brothers who were similar learned it from his dad.
Right.
So it's easy for me to fall into that. And my wife can easily fall into being a little more quiet and reserved and not sharing her emotion. But the key between with Jill and I is we both have that ability to take steps every day where we can exert more control than we did the day before to balance that out. And so one of the things that, and it's funny, I think about it when we do all these talks, I'm like, oh, the other day I started at the beginning with all this loving gratitude and mindset stuff. And usually it comes in at the end, but it's like, it's where does it perfectly fit in? And it's like, it is so key that this is the thing that helped me get better, was that I always believed in myself. And the other thing was when I shifted and I said yes to that yoga DVD, after I had said yes to my future, is something we talked about earlier, is I believed, even though it was really, really hard, I was worthy to receive that life I wanted, and I was worthy to receive the healing. And then I was able to just go, I can make these small changes that are going to make a really big difference in my life. And I really want to empower people to understand early in our conversation that while we're going to probably dive deep into all kinds of little nooks and crannies and things you could do in medical science and all this, the number one thing you can do for yourself is to believe in yourself and know that you're worthy to receive anything that you truly want deep in your heart, you know, when you get objective about it. And we all have the right to live and breathe and really prosper on this beautiful planet. And that's just feel that in your heart, open your heart and feel grateful for who you are and give to yourself so that you can give to others. Because when you give to yourself, you receive the health and the love. And when you learn how to receive, then you're modeling this for your kids, your friends, your partners, and the whole world. And so this is how you can change your internal environment and then positively affect the external environment you're in. So you have your love, protective health bubble around you. And then you can share that with others, because right now I feel that's one of my jobs, Nafisa, is like, I was not able to do that before, but now I can. So it's my job to shine that inner light to other people, to be a beacon. And I heard this cool definition. There's two definitions, and I know I'm a little tangenting now, but I love this.
Beautiful.
I heard this two great things the other day that I just am so happy. They're so concise. Love is the ability to accept another person for who they are without judgment. And it's the without judgment part that just changed everything for me, because I'm always trying to just like, you know, put more to that statement. And it's just like, let them be them. And the other part was leadership is about empowering other people to achieve the goals that are important for them. Mm-hmm. And as a father, my goal is to always allow my daughter to grow into who she is and not make her who I think. And I think it's so important in health that we look at those pieces as well, because these are the everyday things that are in our lives that create so much damn stress. And you can start to change that stress by just saying, yes, I am sick, or yes, I don't feel well, or maybe yes, I feel great. And then say, I am worthy of this and so much more.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's very inspirational for our listeners and important, because people don't talk about this part very often. I think the reason they don't is because they may not have experienced it themselves, right?
Yeah.
So it starts with that self-love, that self-acceptance and non-judgment towards the self. And then when you start there, you can bring it forward to your family, just like you were talking about what you learned from your father. Well, I can say I learned a couple of things from my beloved father too. And so what I learned that wasn't beneficial, right? Maybe anxiety or even a little anger streak. I've also learned, hey, I don't need to carry that on in my family tradition. Now, as I move forward into what I create, doesn't have to be what was passed on to me. And I get to pick and choose what parts I want to bring forward with respect to my own healing and healing others. And
It's so key because the thing, it was funny. It's like we're on the total same wavelength, because one of the things that I wanted to also throw in here is Jill and I made a very clear decision that we wanted to break our family chains. There's a lot of alcoholism. There's a lot of anger. And a couple of things that I think that really came through for me is as I lost my father like 6 or 7 years ago, and thankfully the tumultuousness was very at a very peak of love and gratitude as best we could do when that all happened. And it was good for him. I mean, and you know, we all would prefer obviously to be together. But one of the things I learned is that a lot of times when I was younger, he was trying so damn hard to do the thing that I wanted, but he just didn't have the tools to get past the baggage that he had come with. But he was trying, and a lot of times the trying, he fell flat on his face, but he tried so hard that it ended up hurting all of us. But when I look at it, it doesn't take away that he hurt me, but especially when it's a child, but it was like, I, as an adult, could look back and you have the ability to go back and rewrite your interpretation of your memory, because that man tried so damn hard to love me. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's to the point where there were times where he actually, the one time that I know that he did exactly what I had died for 15 years of my life, I was unable to receive it because I didn't even understand it. So I had to go, I went back, I had this amazing experience where I was able to see all this. And then I remember my mom, this is like, this is one of the most important lessons I ever learned. My mom was always like, she was very much about the church and her religion. And she wanted us to grow up and be saved that way. But for me, my experience of the divine was more outside and playing in the world and being one with nature. And so I go on this 5-day hiking trip through the White Mountains of New Hampshire. I come home, I can't wait. I get on the phone, I call my mom, and I'm like, Mom, I just had the best experience. And she's like, did you go to church today? I'm like, no, I was just in heaven for 5 days, dude.
I was in God's country.
Right. That's where the term comes from. And so, but I was like, and she's like, you know, God, Jesus, the church are there for you when you're ready to come back. And so over the next 3 or 4 years, we kept having this recurring conversation / argument where I'm like, you don't understand it. That's my church. You have your church. That's mine. This is yours. That's mine. And you have to let me have what is important in my life, because that's for me. And we kept having this conversation, and I was like, why can't my mom understand that it is okay for me to have a different experience of the same divine principle and this amazing life? And why can't she let me be me? And why does she have to make me be her? And one day I go, wait a second. I'm trying to have my mom let me be me, but I'm refusing to let her be her. And in that moment, I just said in my head and my heart, I was like, if my mom feels that that's the way she can protect and love me best, I'm fine with it. She never asked me anything about it again. And we had the best relationship. I was like, so I stopped resist. I asked her to do something I was unwilling to do. I wanted her to do something for me that I was unwilling to do for her. And so that's why I never received it. And so when I look at chronic infections and stuff, it's like, there's always this fight, and I want to move away from the fight. And I also want people to understand in their relationships, both with their infection as well as their family, there might be room to change the thought process, not the treatments, not that you're sick and you have something to do, but you could change your relationship with your thinking of it. And also, like I was saying with my dad, you can change your feelings towards the memories, because we know from neuroscience about 50% of all of our memories are incorrect.
Right.
So why don't you just rewrite a new story? Because chances are half of what you remember is wrong anyway. So rewrite the story, because, and now bringing it back to I just like talking about love, because we all could use a lot of it. And the negativity around this pandemic has just got us. I mean, it just highlights where the world is going, and we can change. But when you go to this place of the gratitude and accepting love and changing the way you think about it, now your heart rate variability increases, your parasympathetic nervous system goes from a fight or flight or frozen state back to love and healing and optimal gut health. And then the next one is your immune system gets boosted. and it costs you nothing. And in fact, you're probably going to live like 20 years longer because you're not pissed off all the time.
Right. This is key, what you just brought up, right? About how we do have some, I'm going to loop it back to what you said earlier, how we have a level of control, right? Now, some people might be listening and say, oh, easy for you to say, you're not in pain right now. But
I was.
But he was. And I have to say, so many of my patients also have this experience that you're describing. And I see it, the ones who can embrace what's happening and know that they're on the path of healing, and they deserve a good life. They deserve health. Their immune system calms down because of that, because we know that stress is one cause of immune dysregulation. We sure have a lot of it these days. So to bring in that self-love, that acceptance, even you talked about the relationship with the bugs. That's a big one too, right? Some people say, I hate you, bug. And they're very angry with the bug. There's negativity harboring in them. And I've witnessed this. It's difficult. It takes longer for those people to heal.
What's so interesting, one key point, I just want to punctuate. I also, at the end of all this mindset and body movement stuff, needed doctors to help me. So I am a doctor who helps people with medicines and herbs and other things too. One of the things though, Nafisa, I think that's so important is when people ask why Lyme and even potentially COVID, but Lyme in general and similar infections have such an easy time getting into our bodies and getting into a persistent state is, I think of the term dis-ease, where we hyphenate that word, and we are in a state of imbalance. The more imbalanced we are, the easier it is to get sick. But the other thing is, these organisms do not fight. If you look at Lyme, when it's opportunistic, we all say this, when you have a soft spot, it's going to go for it. But when you start fighting it, what's it going to do? It's not going to fight. It's going to hide and go to sleep. Right. And then when's it going to come out? When you let your guard down or when you stop a treatment, it comes back out. It does not fight reality. And I think that one of the reasons that it gets a stronghold on us is the human being has this beautiful advanced brain, but that advanced brain and the emotions that go along with it also allow us to make decisions where we say that the state that is currently the present moment is not correct, and we can judge things. And so we talk a lot about like fight or flight and freeze states in, you know, polyvagal theory and chronic infections. And basically, a lot of us are familiar with the sympathetic nervous system, which is that fight or flight. You know, so saber-toothed tiger pops out at our campsite. I am pretty darn sure I can run away really quick and I'll make it. So I run. So I flight. Right. Or I'm like, I'm feeling really strong today. I'm going to beat him down today. And I'm going to, but I'm pretty sure I can win. Right. And so then I fight the saber-toothed tiger, and that's our sympathetic. And we need to kind of calm down when that situation with the saber-toothed tiger is over and go into rest and rejuvenation, digest food, poop, pee, sleep, and all that good stuff. That's what we typically think of as a parasympathetic. But there's another state that we've talked about when polyvagal really came out, because some people get caught by the saber-toothed tiger, right? And so I think of it as the modern day saber-toothed tiger is, if you see an outdoor cat, grab a chipmunk or a mouse. So you see the thing's running away. It grabs it. Now it can no longer win. It can no longer get it. So what's it do? Plays dead. Yeah. And then the cat gets bored, drops it, and it runs away. So we have this freeze mechanism where when we don't feel we can win any longer, we get into freeze. And the way to get out of that is actually the opposite of negativity. It's safety, right? So there's two things, and then it goes into COVID pretty quickly. But to get out of this, we talk about safety. But my problem with the word safety is, in the middle of safety, our brain goes, but I am safe and I know I'm safe and I'm still sick. This is a reflex, just like the reflex on your knee when the doctor hits it with the little thing, with the little hammer. Is a reptilian mind, ancient brain reflex to protect you. And so what happens is, I like to use the word familiarity, because when you first have Lyme or when you first got COVID, it was unfamiliar and it was not safe. But if you have chronic Lyme disease, chronic mold illness, MCAS, whatever, or you've got long haul COVID, that state of disease and not feeling well has become familiar. It becomes your comfort zone. So it's not safe, but it feels to your reptilian brain the safest. So then when you and I come in, or Dr. Gordon comes in, and we're like, oh, do X, Y, and Z, and they're like feeling 20% better, boom, all of a sudden that's unfamiliar. So they have to go back to being sick again. This is not a mental, like you have a problem. This is a reflex where your body is actually trying to protect you.
Right. And how many times have you heard patients say, I'm afraid to get better because I don't know what I'm going to do when I'm better. I don't know what it means to be better. And I'm used to this. I know this. I'm afraid, but yes, I want to get better. Right. That.
Right. And it feels it literally like I see people come in and they're better and they're panicked.
Right.
And now right. I want to be really clear. This is not that you have a mental problem. You don't need a medicine for this necessarily. Now, sometimes the medicine may help in the process.
Right.
But the thing is, this is your, and this is the point I really love making. Your body, please remember, your body is not betraying you. Your body in every single blooming moment is doing its very best to protect you and keep you alive. Now, the result of relying on a reptilian reflex, primitive reflex, if you will, for protection, because evolution has not kept up with the changes in society because it's been so fast.
Right.
May not be the one you want, but that does not mean your body betrayed you. So many people get into this, my body betrayed me. And that's almost like a whole new trauma in and of itself.
Right.
Your body is here for you. Now, when you work with people who know and understand this, we can help you move out of that state. So unfamiliar into a, or I should say this old familiar illness state into a more unfamiliar, but now becoming familiar and therefore safe wellness state. We can help you make those strides in a way that works specifically individually for you so you can get there. But it's so key, right?
It is so key, for sure. And just to recognize that, right? Your body is, it's trying its best. It's your body's with you. Sometimes people say, I feel like my body's against me. I feel like it's fighting me. I feel like I'm in a fight with my body. But no, that's not the case. It's just doing its very best with what it knows to do. Kind of like our parents, actually, when we take it back to.
Isn't that really interesting?
Yeah.
And again, it's kind of like that loving is accepting without the judgment. Now, accepting without judgment doesn't mean that if something's not right, that you overlook that. So if you have symptoms of a long haul COVID, you have symptoms of Lyme, I'm not saying that that's okay, or that's good or fine that you have it, or that I want you to have it. What I'm saying is you can choose to supercharge its power to stay or supercharge its power to go. I choose to supercharge its power to go because if I get angry at it, now I can say, look, I'm sick and tired of this shit. Like, I don't want this. I'm sick of feeling bad.
Yeah.
When we have patients come in, we started doing this thing about a year ago, actually. We do a patient commitment. And some of the commitment is committing to myself and my team that you're going to show up and we're going to all do our jobs together. And that's good. But the vast majority of our commitment letter or agreement is so that the patient can commit to themselves that they're worthy of healing, even if they're not really ready to fully embrace that. And we let them tell us their story this many times. Uh-huh. And then I ask them to release it to the medical record because it will be there forever, locked and safe and sound if you ever need it.
Uh-huh.
If we need details, release it to me. I'll protect it. If we need details, I'll go get them. And if I need more, I'll ask you. But after that, allow your story to be over here so that you can create an opening here to write a new story for yourself.
That's
because I want people to move forward with their lives, not just stay on pause.
Right. That is beautiful because it is. It's time to rewrite the story. It's time to have a new beginning. In fact, a very interesting thing I notice with my patients is at some point they tell me, you know what? I'm glad this happened. And I say, you're glad this happened. Tell me more. And they say, you know what? I'm a better person because of this. I'm stronger because of this. I can now help other people because of this. I'm now healed and I'm stronger. I have more self-love. And I tell them, you know, at some point, so this is when a patient might be a little bit newer to me, I tell them at some point you're going to see there's a silver lining.
Right.
And when you see that, you're going to understand it. Most of my patients come out stronger as individuals, because it's been a journey and they have rewritten their story.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting too, is like, I was very sensitive as a child. I mean, I literally remember going, you can feel earthworms under the ground as you're walking. You don't even have to stand still. And mm-hmm. I could feel sap moving in trees. I was like I'm a weird person in some respects. In other groups and circles, everybody's like, oh yeah, that's normal. But I felt so connected to the world. And what I was learning in my parents' approach to religion and their approach to training me and everything and helping me survive was to turn that off. Mm-hmm. And what I learned when I had, in order to get better, I had to reconnect with my natural sensitivity. I had to reconnect with my natural connection to the world. So I had gotten to the point where it was almost like rote. And it was like, once further along I got, it was almost like I was kind of doing the outdoor thing, but I wasn't actually experiencing it and living it. And so what I find with so many people who get chronic illness, whether it's long COVID, whether it's chronic Bartonella or whatever name it is, they're like, I'm so sensitive. I can't stand it. I'm too sensitive to everything. I go, actually, some of that sensitivity could be that you're hypersensitive to something, but some of it could be you're actually relearning your natural state and you're so trained out of it.
Yes.
And I love being sensitive, because as soon as you embrace it, then you can learn how to turn the gain up and down.
Yes.
So when you're in the mall, which I can't say I go to too frequently, I don't even know where the local mall is, to be honest, but it's like, I got to turn it down a little bit. And it's almost like your energy, is it open? Like a lot of us are empaths. And that's the other thing. A lot of people who get chronic illnesses are empaths. It's almost like we bring it in to protect others. So now we have to learn and I'm not saying you deserve this. I'm not saying none of that shit. No. You don't. And well, I mean, maybe for me, I deserved it in a positive way because it changed my life, but you open up your energy to people. One of the things us people who are really empathetic and people who are very sensitive have to do is learn how to bring it in at the right time and right. then open it up again. And that's one of the ways I got my energy back. I was leaking so much energy with two things. One, just leaking it because my energy was so big. Uh-huh. And I didn't have an energetic boundary. But the other one was, I'm just so blown away by my energy opening here that I'm like, I can't even remember the other one. It was like, mm-hmm. you know, it was my anger uh-huh. and my resentment towards like everything, because that's what I was trained, and especially towards how I felt. So that's why I'm saying, if you change your perspective, all it does is benefit you. Changing your perspective will never make you forget that you're sick. If you can forget you have long haul COVID, you can forget you have chronic Lyme, then you don't have it. These things, when you have the physical manifestations, you will not forget your way out of it. You know?
Right. Right. It's so true. I tell my sensitive patients, which they all are, of course, right? I've noticed this
gift.
Chronic illnesses, they happen to be the illnesses of people who are very, very sensitive. Happen to, like we talked about before, we don't believe in coincidences, right? There's a trend here, but I tell them, this is your superpower, your sensitivity. It is your gift. And this is a silver lining, because you're going to learn how to hone in on it and control it, as opposed to it mastering you. You get to master your superpower.
Right.
Right. And they do.
Right. They right. do. And this is like the thing that drives me nuts in any kind of long haul or chronic persistent infection conversation is, you're going to have to deal with it. It'll go into like remission. I'm like, it's complete and utter crap. Now, some people will prove out that they can't fully recover. Right. But right. many, many, many more people than the internet makes it sound like, and all the support groups make it sound like, will get better. And if that number is not high enough right now, that's because we need to have more people listening to this conversation and pairing it with the treatment side, the more conventional approach to treatment side right. as well.
Right. So I'm going to just take a moment to tell our audience that Tom and I and Eric, most people on the summit, do use conventional medicine, and we use holistic medicine. We have those tools at our disposal. We use them every day, and we use this piece that Tom and I are talking about today. And the reason we're talking about it is because it's not spoken about enough. And we want to give you inspiration
And I think, like, when you look at placebo in medicine, we accept that the power of the mind and the heart are about 33% of all medical and surgical outcomes. Yet in conventional medicine, we just throw it out the window and we control for it to make sure the medicine works 5% more so we can sell it to you. I'm like, wait a second. If I can get a 42% change in my cholesterol using a medicine, or I can get a 33% change in my cholesterol using my mind with no side effects whatsoever, and it'll except for positive ones where my life changes, I know what pill I want, and it ain't the one that's got all the side effects. And I just think it's so important. And in my healing, it was 70 to 75% of it was the mind-body connection and taking action on it. And that's the other part I think is weird about this, is where a lot of people are like, oh, you can't say it's just what you think. You're right, because it's what you think and the actions you take in that mindset. So for me, when someone handed me the DVD, I was like, well, I tried yoga before, it doesn't do anything. But I had a sense the way the person presented it to me, they didn't know why they were giving it to me. Mm-hmm. They had bought it for somebody else who couldn't tolerate doing it. And they go, I woke up today and I knew I had to give this to you.
That's beautiful.
And I was like, I don't even know what this voodoo is, but I'm all about it. Uh-huh. And so what was interesting was I turned it on and I started doing it. And it was one of the videos where they taught you the original quote unquote power yoga. Uh-huh. And the problem was the movements and the breathing didn't line up to me. In my sixth state, I was like, it still doesn't feel natural. Mm-hmm. But he was on to something, and I think he was trying to make it commercial and changed it. So I said, let's go to the back and find out where he studied. And I saw Ashtanga Yoga Research Institute in India. Then I figured out who had something that could train me to do it. And what I learned was that original yoga out of India was the thing that really worked, because it wasn't about the movement that everybody thinks of in power yoga and Ashtanga, right, and the physical. It was, my teacher said, yoga is about movement on breath. And he said, if you ever get to the point where your breath is not full, you've gone too far and you need to back off. Now, it doesn't mean some days you don't push just a hair,
right,
to progress, but you never push hard. And so I've started to implement this in meditation, and all of a sudden I could do meditation because I was trying to meditate. Now I could just do it. I could just be there. And then when I have a conversation with someone else, if I catch my breath being shallow, I pull back on it. If I think about a conversation about COVID, I'm like, okay, is this a conversation that's going to change? And so I use my breath and as one of the indicators. And I learned that none of this is a mission. I mean, in terms of like, I have to finish this, but it's right action. And I learned that I don't have to try hard. I just have to try. And I just have to do these things and be present in the moment. And the other thing that's interesting too, I was just thinking the piece about COVID, because one of the reasons I think it took off so much, uh-huh, is the state of insane negativity, mm-hmm, which is what so James Allen has his crazy book, As a Man Thinketh, and it was written in the early 1900s, which is why he probably said man, but he does talk about women inside, uh-huh, for anybody who's, he was not in 2022 or 2023, right? But anyway, he has this one chapter that the Cliff Note version is, the environment is but your looking glass. And what I love is, so what I'm seeing outside in COVID, where I think that one of the reasons it has a purpose too, but it's showing me that my negativity allows things to spread. It also has helped me understand that when we come together and I stop fighting it, we can actually progress and we can make real, because if you look at like the progress that's been made on long haul COVID, when people work together,
yes,
this is something we haven't seen before. And for everybody who's pissed off at COVID and or Lyme, COVID has actually brought us to a place where we can have a conversation about immune dysregulation.
Yes.
And people were actually looking at it going, oh shit, this might be real. So all of a sudden, I had a conversation earlier today with a family. Their daughter had new onset seizures. We confirmed that she's got Bartonella, and her neurologist is like, well, I don't know enough about this, but I'm now, and I don't know what before was. He just said, now I'm open to this possibility.
Right. And see, we have the blessing of working with these patients, these very, mm-hmm, complex patients for a long, long, long time. And we've learned so much, but I have to say, people thought prior, right, that our patients were lying or making this up, or just depressed, or they thought doctors like us were quacks. Maybe a lot of them still do. It doesn't matter.
Maybe I am. I don't know.
Okay, you know, because I help my patients, you know, I
get better. Yeah,
they get better. So, but now this is seen less as quackery because this immune dysregulation, suddenly there's research on these things when there was just minuscule research on it, or there was just a little bit of research on how infections can cause autoimmunity, right? So mm-hmm. people will go to the rheumatologist and they're told, well, you have this autoimmune condition and here's a steroid. And then that's all there is to it. And then they would come to people like you and me, we'd say, well, it's likely caused by an infection or a combination of infections and toxins and stress in your life. And they say, but the rheumatologist didn't tell me that, right? But I think, or the neurologist didn't tell me that, but now they're opening up to understand because they're reading the papers. It's there. I'm so happy that what we've hypothesized over all this time is now showing up in the research.
And I think there's like what I've, Dr. Jones, Dr. Gordon, you know, us, like all of our colleagues who, why would we do this if there wasn't a mission of sharing this health with other people, knowing that we didn't know enough? And so one of the things, and I think because we're leading with our heart, which is what I want everyone listening to start doing in all aspects of your life, because you will supercharge your healing and optimize your protocol now. So you can do more, you can do a lot of work along with the protocol that you're taking and really, you know, amplify its benefit. But one of the things is like, I've seen in my career, the last 15 years, a lot of the stuff that we didn't know 12 years ago, but we thought clinically because our doctors spent the time with patients to get to know them and figure out who was full of crap and who was telling the truth and who sounded like they were full of crap, but they were actually stuck in a freeze state and they couldn't get out of it. And it wasn't like a pick up your bootstrap thing. But because we all led with love and desire to share that love with other human beings and spread this, now we're finding that a lot of those observations are now supported by science. The persister forms in Lyme and Bartonella are supported. The mold, the you know, issues with moldy bolt buildings and exposure, the issues around hyperreactive mast cells, like they're all being borne out. And all these things that like we used to say, I think this science is catching up with. And then that science is allowing us to tweak what we do because it gives us, not only catches up, but gives us a little more. So when COVID happened, we knew how to treat immune dysregulation from infection.
Right.
Now, researchers have jumped on that bandwagon, taken it, and because it was such a big deal, they were able to get all these people. I mean, we have some research groups that have over 36,000 people in research trials telling us what inflammation has to do with the vaccine, with post-COVID long haul, Lyme disease, maybe, and even chronic fatigue syndrome that may say you have this or this, or you have this and this. Right. And this is like brand new stuff, but we're getting, because of COVID, we're getting the data that's going to change Lyme. But because of Lyme and all the other things we talked about, we actually have the ability to even comprehend how to treat long COVID.
That's where I feel so blessed as a doctor, because we've been doing this for so long. It's what we've always thought. It's what we've done over and over, and we've learned it from our mentors who did that hard work, like you were talking about, of decipher what's what. Through their clinical wisdom, we learned it, we did it ourselves. And now here's the research to back what we've been doing. And it's very gratifying. I mean, that's a silver lining of this pandemic. Unfortunately, so many people had to suffer in this pandemic, but we have learned so much. And
Well, think about it this way. I mean, I'm thinking like Brown did that study where they estimated by the end of 2020, we would have about 1.9 million plus people with post-treatment Lyme syndrome. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the research, you know that a lot of those people have chronic Lyme disease. And I believe in post-Lyme syndrome, meaning you can have non-active infection symptoms,
right?
And you can have active infection symptoms, and you can have both at the same time. There's research about both. And so I'm not saying one or the other, I'm saying yes, but you know, it's interesting. So if we think about it, we have people working to help people suffering actively over 2 million people. We had a huge group of people who have suffered that then allow, now, and granted, I don't want them to suffer, and we're all trying to move forward, like we've said 100 times.
Right.
But because of our experience with all of those people and trying to help, we knew how to at least get going in this direction in this crazy ass pandemic. And then the crazy thing that just came to my mind too is some of these drugs that we all thought we were wanting to use, and some people said yes and some people said no, and the government started yelling at us. Turns out that maybe one of the reasons they work, when you actually look at the research, because it was working, and why, and you look at the research, is it could actually be because it's fixing the bacteria in your gut and not because it's doing anything to the virus. And you're like, wait a second.
Exactly.
Let's look at science.
Right. Because we've been using certain medications to treat parasites for decades, at least 2 decades. Right.
And they're immune modulators. And now, lo and behold, they increase bifidobacteria levels. Imagine that.
Exactly. Oh, thank you, Tom. This has just been so great. Just so much fun talking to you. Is there anything that you want to, any parting words you want for our audience?
Yeah, you know, I just want to say thank you so much for listening and being open to a perspective that I learned through a really long, hard journey. And the beauty is, as an osteopathic physician, we're taught about this. Your body has this amazing self-regulatory, self-healing mechanism, and you truly are. And this isn't like the last 20 years of fancy marketing words. Back in the mid 1800s, osteopaths were talking about this body, mind, spirit connection. And we know that traditions all over the world have brought that in. And our conversation tonight, I feel like, really is about bringing the mind part and the spirit and the emotions and the humanness and the fact that we're human beings back into the picture of healing, and how your body, when we focus on this, can bring down inflammation. It can bring down, or I should say, it can increase immune function. It can improve gut function. And the one thing I usually talk about, and I didn't, so I'll just give it 3 seconds, is yeah. A lot of times people have insomnia, and then they're also trying to take brain detoxers, right? Mm-hmm. Sleep is the number one time when your brain is detoxifying. So the best way to be able to get over your insomnia and to get deep sleep when you're recovering from these long haul symptoms is to calm your nervous system. And the best way to get out of the fight, flight, or freeze is to bring yourself back to love and gratitude. And it all starts there. And then you can branch out to healing. And like I said, I've been symptom free for over 12 years. And that's my sincerest wish for all of you listening and all your family members.
Thank you so much, Tom. What a beautiful message for everybody. And I know the listeners are taking it in, and I know it's going to influence their healing. So thank you so much.